Welcome to Five Shot Weekly. This week in the mailbag, one viewer asks, does Caleb Wiley have a lower ceiling than George Bello? Also, is Noah Cobb going to keep Steon Gregerson out of the team for a while? We're getting all that and more coming up. And wherever it is you get your pods, subscribe, share, and leave us a good rating. Welcome to the show, Five Shot FM. I'm AJ, and this is Michael. And LA United, they drew the Philadelphia Union 2-2, the only undefeated team left in MLS, and we unfortunately kind of wet the bed a little bit. We had the lead and kind of pissed it away, to go along with this metaphor. But yes, before we get into the match review, yes, massive shouts out to the Patreon members, and especially Gavin, Jordan, Niall, Andrew, and Chris. You guys are legends. Join us there. We have some very, very tasty things that we are cooking up. Maybe breaking down some video, maybe some stat breakdowns as well. So definitely keep an eye out for that. But anyway, so into the match review and LA United at the Benz. I mean, we're still undefeated there. It's, you know, still somewhat of a fortress. We just cannot let ourselves be complacent and let teams back in like this. This definitely felt like a loss for a lot of people. It, not quite soul crushing, but a little bit in the effect that it's like, okay, can we not do this in the future? Because, this feeling, not so good. Doesn't really excite a lot of people. Like, we probably prefer the other way around, where if we came back, you know, and was able to draw this 2-2. But what would you think? I mean, it's like, you know, those like late minute heroics, in, you know, from yesteryear, or this feeling.
I think I prefer this feeling, and it pains me to say that because it is so painful. However, I don't think, I think that what this kind of game indicates, the way we played, I think that it shows that we're a team that can dominate good teams, at least at home, and basically conduct a game to our will. And that is a very good thing. That's a very good position to be in, when you can have Philadelphia come to you and you just run them over, essentially. Yeah, of course, we, like you said, pissed the bed in this game. But for 75% of that game, we were in the driver's seat. Philadelphia looked beaten and battered. And against a good team, that's what you want to see. Whereas in years past, you talk about how we had to come clawing back. That's not exactly the same type of feeling. You have a, you know, we're trying to get back into the game. Who knows if we'll do it? It requires heroics. Heroics are extremely variable things that happen in the game that you cannot rely on. Whereas the system we employed against Philadelphia, if we can continue pulling off something like that, that's a system that can run teams off the pitch. And I think if Mascara didn't hit that hospital ball, it wouldn't have given Philadelphia motivation to try to get something from this game. We would have probably put a third one in and put this team to bed. Unfortunately, it didn't happen like that. I don't think Mascara is always going to hit that ball. I don't think we're going to have that same type of problem very often going forward when we play this way. And so I would rather be, you know, in the driver's seat winning games like we should have with this one. Let's be real, Philadelphia got lucky with us gifting them a goal, and that jump-started their whole resurgence. So without that, I think we would have just dunked on them, and this, we wouldn't even be talking about this. It would have been like 2-0, moving on to the next team. So I think I'd rather be here if and only if we continue to play like this and beat teams and, you know, be in the driver's seat and not have to claw back games and hope for heroics, because I'm sick of hoping. I just want to come into a game and go, okay, we got this. We're in the driver's seat. We're in control.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's definitely more sustainable from this end than a late inning heroics, if you will, going with that metaphor. But it is also going into this match, not many of us had this as a win, that's for sure. And, you know, for us to be 2-0 up, but also, yeah, I mean, my prediction was us drawing 2-2, and so I mean, while it was spot on, I didn't think it would be in this fashion. So I was very pleasantly surprised in the way and manner in which we actually played. Yeah, the performance actually for most of the match was largely positive, very good, especially when you are down to your third choice striker, and yeah, your defense is as makeshift as it can be, with two players that have not really played together very much at all in Luis Abram and Noah Cobb. And I think arguably, yeah, they looked pretty good and weren't really at fault for too much in the match. So, you know, I think what's great, I think, is Daniel Rios getting his debut goal with us, which, you know, his first start, first goal. He scored 5 goals against the Philly Union in his most recent 2 MLS matches. Of course, he had played for Nashville SC and Charlotte FC before that, so he knows this team, and I think that's a positive, you know, that he knows the league, and, you know, he knows the rigors, he knows, you know, what each team is generally about. That definitely is helpful. You know, if he's played against some of these defenses before, having him as a third choice ain't too bad, especially how well he took this. I mean, it was just a dime of a ball from Thiago Almada. I mean, just as well as you could place it. And Daniel Rios, I mean, he got himself into a really, really good position in the box where he was essentially unmarked. I mean, yeah, he had somebody next to him, but like that thing just dropped on his head. He just had to head it back to where it came from, essentially. And yeah, he was able to beat Andre Blake. But yeah, poor
and
Andre Blake.
Let's be real that having a striker that can reliably and consistently beat a keeper like Andre Blake, who we have had such trouble beating in the past, that's massive. So,
yeah maybe Daniel Rios is the antidote to Andre Blake in that, he's the way to beat him somehow, just because of the way he plays.
But it's a bad luck charm, man.
Yeah, and maybe it is this because, yeah, you know, Andre Blake is a player, is a goalkeeper that is very good at shot stopping, but if you just take that equation away with pretty much a point blank header, I mean, not many keepers are going to stop that. So, yeah, you basically take that, you know, that shot stopping ability out of the equation. And so that's probably like
Andre had to go out this game too.
Exactly.
Because of the bad luck. Bad luck, Rios.
Could be, but yeah, I mean, and it's odd that you know, he goes out and then, you know, we concede, but and then we're never and
apparently
able
we
to
can't score on the backup goalie, which I thought was ridiculous.
Yeah,
with all those shots Thiago was taking, I was like, one of these has got to go in against a backup keeper.
Surely.
And then of course he stand, yeah, they're all shot right at him.
Yeah, and that's the thing, it's like, yeah, the positioning is pretty decent, and so that's, you know, that's part of it, but they're also like, they're shot right in the middle of goal a little bit. So that, unfortunately, is a bit of the rub here, where it's likely why we weren't able to find, ultimately, the winner. But, yeah, our second goal, though. Oh, my Lord. Just come on down, Caleb Wiley. Take a bow. What a strike. I initially thought inside the stadium that it was deflected. No, it was just so well hit that it bounced on the ground before it hit the back of the net. But yeah, Caleb Wiley with this freaking laser. And yeah, I mean, Thiago Mata, you know, kind of a back pass, not really not really like creating something. It's more just like, okay, let's recycle the ball. Let's get us out of, you know, a little bit of trouble here. But Caleb Wiley found that space. He had the wherewithal to know that he should shoot probably, and there was that opening. And to beat the goalkeeper at the near post, oof. I mean, I'm a little bit surprised that we didn't even get any sort of, you know, like Wiley's goal didn't get any recognition for MLS Goal of the Week at all. But, you know, it's because it wasn't like a, you know, just a straight line, you know, screamer that's, you know, never hit the ground, all that type of stuff. But, I mean, I don't think, to my recollection, anybody hit it from as far as he did. So,
no. And he's 19.
And he's 19. Nine freaking teen. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, after 63 minutes, 2-0 up, you know, we're thinking, oh, okay, you know, against this Philly side, we're golden. This should be good. No. Because yeah, pretty much shortly after that, yeah, we do make some substitutions again, and I feel like it unsettles the team a little bit. And yeah, I get
that it. That is a pattern. It does seem to be a little bit of a pattern that right. We have trouble readjusting to when the new subs come in. Either game, we talk about game speed. You know, it's just whatever it is, they have to figure that out. Because I am starting to see a bit of a trend when we get subs on, we start to look a little more vulnerable.
Right. And, you know, with even just the makeshift lineup that we had going into the game, you know, Tyler Wolf on the left side, Sean Da Silva wasn't able to start. You know, and at times, Saba, he kind of drifted into other areas. So, you know, I think it didn't make it where it was just completely anemic on one side or the other. But... oh, man, I mean, it's just like, yeah, the Mosquera back pass, we mentioned on the live post-match fan reactions, that's, yeah, I mean, game state really matters here, where he's not at game speed, he gives it away. Brad Guzan couldn't really do anything about it. I mean, he tried to come out, but then he backpedaled because he realized he couldn't really, you know, do anything about it. And then it was just like a really monster shot at that point, because you just have a gaping net. So, you know, it's pretty much at that point, if Yuri didn't miss, or I mean, if he did miss, then it's like, okay, wow, you know, like, you're terrible. But it's at this point, though, yeah, like, that's where, okay, you know, that's, and then plus the... the foul throw-in, which, you know, some people are saying a whole number of things. You know, some people are saying, oh, well, a little bit of the toe was on it. Some people are saying that VAR can't check it because, you know, it wasn't called as well. There's a number of things that are frustrating because, yeah, you know, these refs are being paid more now. And, yeah, you have the picture of it, where the linesman is staring at the foot and doing nothing. Doing absolutely nothing. But whether
and
that...
if you wanna see me argue with Andrew Wiebe on Twitter or X about this, that's MW_ATLUTFanTV.
Yeah, he's usually the guy with the Cheez-Its, you know, kind of instant replay where he's reviewing... the quote-unquote bad calls from the refs. And I mean, yeah, it's you know, I don't know if it's like it's baffling, the argument from Andrew Wiebe. But you know, it's it's not partial, obviously. But, and you know, obviously we are partial, but I mean, just looking at it, it's just like like, it's as frustrating as it gets from, you know, a ref standpoint, when it's, okay, something that maybe is left to interpretation or something is the argument there. But is it really, though? You know, there is a pretty cut and dry part of it as well that, you know, like if you're...
It boils down, it really quickly summated by like, yeah. he thinks, and a lot of people think this way, that there are just kind of two classes, two categories of rules in MLS. They are not all the same. They are not all adjudicated the same either, in that in one category, these are rules that, you know, you can adjudicate down to the, you know, millimeter or centimeter. To find whether someone was onside or offside, things like this, or they'll get really specific, and then they'll be like, you know, with those types of rules, it's okay to be very specific, and we should, you know, be granular and examine everything. And then there's some other rules where they're like, we don't really need to. It's not really that important. It's kind of against the quote-unquote spirit of the game to be too granular for other rules. So, you know, it's like, selective nitpickiness. And so like I was like, that I don't think there should be selective nitpickiness, but some people do, and they're like, you know, don't get all upset about a potential possible illegal throw-in. No, we should be worrying about whether or not the Philadelphia player was offside, and then like that was down to like a centimeter or whatever, and I think it was actually nine inches when some guy on Twitter posted, like, he did some kind of, like, photo analysis or something like that. But either way, you know, I just don't think there should be two classes. I have a dream. I have a dream where one day all rules are the same. So maybe one day that'll be come to fruition.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't want to compare you to a civil rights leader, but yeah. Yeah.
Hey, this is Atlanta. It's fine.
Yeah, right. But in terms of any of that, though, it's all I'm asking is for consistency. And that's the problem, is that we got blown a whistle for a foul throw earlier in the match. And so, yeah, like if you're calling that, well, then call it both on both sides. So, you know, it's a... that's the frustrating bit, is that you know, there's just not the case for it, you know, just being consistent from match to match, minute to minute, and it's a question of why, like, you know, like, why can these refs not not call it fair? But yeah, anyway, later on, so yeah, it's like they do get the equalizer, and my God, it's just it's the gut punch of gut punches here, where you're feeling, yeah, just like, how do we let them back in? I mean, it was you know, a pretty physical match, I would say, that I would say kind of made it where maybe the scoreline ultimately does make sense to a degree, where, okay, yeah, while we could have won it, they did have some really good chances too. And so it's you know, the later on chances were obviously the best chances, but earlier in the match a little bit too, they did kind of threaten, where, yeah, I was a little bit like, okay, yep. You know, it's I think the draw is fair at the end of the day. It's just how it happened, and the way it happened, you know, that's the part that hurts the most. But Pineda saying after the match that the second goal conceded was due to a lapse of concentration to press highly and on the goalkeeper leaving passing options exposed, and that team mentality.
Sorry, one second. I just want to say, 142 games in MLS for Kai Wagner. How many goals has he scored? Do you know?
I do not, but probably not many. He's a fullback.
Five goals.
Yeah.
Five goals.
And this was a really well-taken goal, though. I mean,
just decided to randomly have at it, and boy, was it a good shot. It just sucks when you get beat by just a random happenstance kind of. Like, we decide not to immediately close down on a guy who never scores, and then of course he scores. So
right,
which, screw, I mean, us, I guess.
Right, and you know, you can You can slightly understand why he wasn't closed down fully at like full speed, but it is, I mean, take nothing away from the strike. It's unbeatable. I mean, basically, or not unbeatable, but unstoppable. It's basically, Guzan had no chance. It's completely out of his reach. So, yeah. But it's the whole lapse of concentration. It's like, okay, yeah, you know, we see this time and time again. We pretty much switch off a lot. And you can't do that at this level. You can't do that in the box. You can't do that on any player in the box. And yeah, when we score two, we should be able to win, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact is that we are just still a little soft at times, allowing other teams to kind of get back into matches. But he did mention that the team played well overall, pleased with Wiley. Abram had a great, great game, quote unquote, and speaks highly of Schlies as well, according to the press. But I think something that I wanted to highlight that maybe we haven't talked about and haven't seen anybody else talk about is Noah Cobb and him possibly being able to keep Stan Gregerson out for a while. You know, obviously he is coming back from, you know, a surgery and an injury, but Noah Cobb had a really good match here. You know, yes, is he a player that is maybe as good on the ball as Stan Gregerson? As good in the air as Stan Gregerson? Maybe as pacey as him? No, but I think he's had a very solid set of starts where we haven't missed that much from a defensive standpoint. You know, it's I think these goals were not his fault. And so, you know, while it still is always on the team and the team collective to play team defense, I think Cobb individually had a really good game. And, you know, I don't think we're, at least with him against the top team, we weren't missing that much. And, you know, yeah, you have the intangibles of a Gregerson that, you know, maybe will help you win some other games down the line. But Noah Cobb has been impressive. And we've seen this from him in the preseason. But I think he deserves his flowers. He's a player that, with obviously more development, this homegrown could develop into a real player for LA United. So definitely very...
And he was like an inch away from stopping the Yuri shot too.
Yeah.
He came sliding in like a half a second too late to stop it.
Yeah. And honestly, yeah, it's like the fact that he was that close to even... Because when it was that bad of a hospital ball and the net was gaping that much, it's incredible. But I think large in part, XG says it, where 2.1 for us, 1.8 for the Union. We won the possession battle, but it's just large in part. It still was. Kind of a back and forth match to a degree. And we were, this is the thing too. It's like, okay, yeah, 13 shots isn't that bad, largely, but it still is, I think, a little bit more than I prefer on a general basis. Like if we can really keep teams to under 10, we're cooking. And, you know, I think most of the teams, if at home, they're not going to be scoring too much. So, if we just trust that, you know, our attack, maybe not just trust, but, you know, if we develop both ends of the, you know, of the ball there, I think we can really make this where this no longer becomes a problem. But yep. Anyway, LA United, they return back to the Benz against FC Cincy, and we will have that preview later on for you in the show. But let's get into the news, and yes, the Eastern Conference, it looks like this, where Inter Miami are up top. They're leading with 15 points. They're tied with New York Red Bulls at 15, but the yeah, just a little bit in terms of the delineating factors keep them in second. Philly are in third, and Columbus, Cincy, kind of round out that top five, where we are coming in at sixth, with Charlotte surprisingly right behind us. So yeah, that Dean Smith effect is taking heat a little bit, and yeah, they have a pretty decent start to the season. But yeah, in terms of MLS and the new initiatives that are being implemented this weekend, so there are three of them. The injured players who are down for 15 seconds must leave the field and remain off the field for 2 minutes. That is very, very detrimental if you are a player that shithouses. But yeah, sub players.
Why couldn't they put this in before we played Philadelphia?
I know, right? Yeah, they're exactly the type of team that does this. Because something we didn't speak about really this time, we did kind of talk about it in the fan reactions, was that Jose Martinez should have been sent off. But, you know, it's one of those things where that would have probably, because that was before the goals, maybe would have changed the game, like, completely. Where,
probably.
Yeah, they probably didn't really have a chance. And we would have tore them a new one because, yeah.
And Jose Martinez is a good player. So without him, that would have been really bad with them.
Oh, exactly. So, yeah. As well, sub players have 10 seconds to leave. Otherwise, new player must wait 60 seconds to enter. So, yeah, you know, no more clapping the entire stadium, high-fiving every single player on the field, and hugging everybody, or passing along the captain's armband, all that type of stuff. Yeah, you just gotta get the hell off. So, okay, all right. And then in-stadium VAR announcements. Which, okay, I like it. You know, that bit where it's, okay, you know, NFL has been doing it for a minute in terms of instant replay and kind of refs having to talk about that. So if it's that, because I'm not sure exactly if that's what they mean, but if the ref has to talk to the entire stadium, ooh, oh boy. That could be really spicy, and I like it. They should have that pressure on them a little bit. They already have massive pressure in it, and pretty intense pressure anyway. But I mean, it's something that they need to be held accountable for a lot of their decisions. So yeah, it's definitely part of it. But yeah, any of those that you know, maybe you're opposed to.
I want to see a little bit how it plays out first before I have a hard feeling about any of these. I've heard some controversy about specifically around like the 2 minute one, but we'll see. You know, I want to wait a little bit and reserve my opinion before I have like a hard position about those.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause yeah, 2 minutes does seem pretty harsh for a player that, okay, maybe he legitimately actually had a a head injury, but then now you're like, okay, so you know, some it might increase the number of hard fouls, you know, and then you're a team that is able to play that advantage for 2 whole minutes. Like, that could be pretty, you know, kind of like double jeopardy in a way, where a player gets injured and then, yeah, like, they're legitimately injured and they're off for 2 minutes and you have to play with 10 men or more, who knows, like that. Yeah, it's there's so many scenarios where I feel like there's some very
during
smart
that
players.
do you know if during that time that they, let's say they get hit, they're down and they don't get up in time, and you know, they go out and then they actually are like kind of legitimately injured and they're not sure they can continue. And they go out to the sideline. If they're sitting on that sideline and they decide, actually, you know what? No, I don't. Or the medical people say, you know what? No, this player can't continue. While they're still out, can they be they can slate themselves to be subbed at that point?
Yeah, I don't know, but you know, I think they were talking about kind of a concussion type of sub at some point. I don't think that is still the case as a rule that will be implemented, but I would feel like that would be, you know, obviously those type of things that are important. Maybe a leg injury, those type of things. Yeah, if it's serious enough, obviously they should signal that, okay, yeah, like this is serious, I cannot continue. And I think, you know, players that are like legitimately injured usually anyway, they will immediately signal to the bench. So you know, there is that kind
of I think there'll be more of that now. So like, you know, there'll be more I'm legitimately injured, come on, let's go, versus you know, someone who's, they just get up pretty much immediately. Which I is the probably the intended effect of the whole change. So we'll see.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. But yeah, as well, I think something that was interesting was that yeah, the Philly Union players, Kyle Wagner, Bedoya, Gazdag, McGlynn, Sullivan, and Julian Carranza have all been fined. The club, the manager, they all got mass confrontation warnings for swarming the referee at the end of the match. So, well deserved.
It's not Philly without something like this.
I know, right? And, yeah, it pretty much exemplifies, like, yeah, you know, okay. While it was not consistent from the refs on both sides, we were not the only side that felt aggrieved. So, you know, it is probably vindication a little bit, unfortunately, but it's... That's highly annoying, but also, haha, for you Union fans and players, club, all that. But yeah, anyway, so next bit of news is that it's been 10 years since Atlanta got the word that they were getting an MLS team. And yeah, amazing. I mean, April 16th, 2014, it feels like a whirlwind, but yeah. Insane that it's already been 10 years since that announcement, and yeah, you know, here's the 10 more years. But yeah, obviously some incredible things have happened since then. I mean, it's just amazing. And so definitely you know, with the MLS Cup bringing the first championship since the 95 World Series from the Atlanta Braves to Atlanta, you know, definitely has been incredible. And more and more trophies, obviously, since then. But hopefully some more in our future, because we're tired of not winning trophies. Let's keep winning things. But next bit of news is that Caleb Wiley, he was awarded a place on the MLS Team of the Match Day for that long-range goal. Definitely well deserved there. And yeah, basically, you know, that's that just makes sense. But also, vice chairman and yeah, of the AMB Sports and Entertainment, Steve Cannon, he announced that he will retire from the organization at the end of June. And yeah, basically one of Arthur Blank's kind of right-hand men. And yeah, he was definitely an integral part in the creation of LA United. So yeah, definitely wish him the best in retirement. But yeah, any thoughts on pretty much all of the news so far?
Not really. Keep it short and sweet.
Yeah, cool. So LA United 2, they fell unfortunately to the Philadelphia Union 5-0. Unfortunately. Ooh. At Fifth Third Bank Stadium on Monday night. And Academy defender Caden Moore made his professional debut with his appearance in the starting lineup. I think, you know, the more you pull from the twos for the first team match, the more the twos are going to be a little bit very, very weak. And unfortunately, I think that's kind of the case here. So, yeah, you know, I think results don't really, again, matter too much at the twos. But, yeah, you know, 5-0 is still a pretty ugly scoreline. Last bit of news, though, and this is very, very intriguing, is that former Atlanta United head coach Gabriel Heinze, he is being rumored to join Mikel Arteta's coaching staff at Arsenal. But he also has first-team head coach offers from around the world, too. But, you know, this kind of plays a little double whammy here in terms of, you know, it's interesting for me being an Arsenal fan, and it's like, do I want Heinze anywhere near the Arsenal team? No. But, you know, apparently they're very good friends because they both played together at PSG. They talk on a consistent basis, apparently. Heinze, he has some very spicy methods, as we know, with holding water. You know, there's the whole stories about him not being too amicable around players and...
No days off, like they were... Yeah. Restricted how many days that they got. It was like they were saying, like, oh, we commonly get like this many days after a game or something like this. And Heinze is like, no, none of that. Back to work.
Right. Like, definitely seems like a more strict type of guy and not really a modern type of coach. I think that showed when he was here. And that, there was a lot of people that were amazed at his methods. And not in a good way. And so, yeah. Super interesting. I mean, Heinze, hopefully you do not go anywhere near Arsenal. But you can get another first team head coach job, please. You know, someone take a flyer on him in Argentina. But, you know, that definitely is reading for very, very... troublesome news, at least for me, because Fabrizio Romano also reported that. So, you know, it's not, you know, there's a level of it that is probably pretty true. So, yeah, any thoughts on that, Michael? Can imagine.
If you're an Atlanta United fan, maybe a more recent Atlanta United fan, you don't know what the Watergate controversy was with Gabriel Heinze, I suggest you look it up on Google. It's a wild ride.
Yeah, man. It's there's some he said, she said, but man, it's like, why would people lie?
And the fact that Doug Robertson recently was, like, I saw him on Twitter. Someone asked him a question about Heinze and about, like, his media availability and his warmness towards the media. Doug was like, no, he was completely not warm at all. He was extremely, like, putting words in Doug's mouth, but, like, he was obtuse. He didn't want to talk with us too much. So, the media weren't too keen on him either.
Yeah, which, I mean, you know, not every head coach is going to be that way either. I mean, it's pretty much probably the least favorite part of their job, I'm sure. But, you know... I think that's something that we can appreciate about Gonzalo Pineda is that you know, he's pretty amicable with the press, and that's probably a big part of it, is that he is a spokesperson for the club in a pretty positive way. But all right, but anyway, that is the news, and it gets us into the mailbag, and you guys send in these questions through IG story and also Discord, and please continue to do so, and we might answer your question in the future. But, first question from Josh Cohen fan says, rumors of a new left back coming in during the summer in the early season, now moving closer to mid-season, what positions should we develop on, or what players should we sell? Interesting question.
You want to take this first while I think about it?
Sure. So, I mean, the rumors of a new left back, I mean, obviously we, you know, sent on loan Aidan McFadden. Now that really leaves us with only one player at the fullback position to really be the understudy, and that's Ronald Hernandez. But in terms of what we need to develop, yeah, we need to develop fullbacks for sure from the organization to really help fill up the coffers. I think we're pretty solid in midfield with Ajani Fortune, with Ashton Gordon up top as well as a forward, as a striker. We have some options coming from either the academy or the twos that could help. Now, in terms of midseason, yeah, we absolutely need to make this a priority in terms of fullback because, yeah, God forbid, one of them goes down. Well, now we don't have really anybody that can, be the understudy. And in terms of players we should sell, depends on who actually has value to other teams because obviously, we should drop a contract in the sense of Derek Etienne Jr. But in terms of sell, obviously a lot of these players just came in or are coming in from the academy. There's not many players that I would say are at that level of, we need to get rid. Do you feel like there's a player that, you would urgently sell?
Urgently, no. I don't think we're there yet. But we are getting close to perhaps a nice Caleb Wiley time. So, one of our Discord chatters was talking about,
that question. We'll get to that question if that's what you're referring to. And you know what? Let's handle it.
So Caleb Wiley probably is the closest, but think we're there quite yet.
Right. Because Lancillo Green, he asked in our Discord, he wrote, "All right, I'm going to choose violence. Even though Caleb Wiley is starting for the club right now, I think he has a limited ceiling. If you want me to be truly honest, I think George Bello, before he got promoted to the first team, had a way higher ceiling than Wiley ever had. I think it would be in Atlanta's best interest to sell him before he reaches that point. All that to say, I am not very high on Caleb Wiley like a lot of people are." Super duper interesting take. I think something that's delving into that. We kind of did a little stat comparison because it was very intriguing of a take that we had to kind of look at it because from the offset or the outset of that, with the recency bias aside, Caleb Wiley seems like a player that maybe does have that higher upside because George Bello, he did go to a Bundesliga 2 side in Armin Bielefeld. It was maybe something that was a little underwhelming of a move, and in terms of Transfermarkt, as far as how much stock you put into that, I don't put a ton of stock into it, but we obviously sold for around 4 mil. He is now worth only about 1.3, if I recall correctly. And so, Caleb Wiley right now is, I think, worth, was it about 4?
5. He's sitting at 5.
Yeah. And so, obviously, it's at different age points right now. Bello's at 22. Caleb Wiley's 19, but we did compare their two full seasons when they were teenagers, and George Bello was 19 in 2021, played 2,400 minutes, and Caleb Wiley played 2,300 minutes. Of course, a little bit where Wiley, he also played as a forward a little bit, but Bello maybe at times played as a left midfielder. But both pretty much were playing left back, and the eye test says this as far as how I read it is that George Bello was the better dribbler, was the player that was a better crosser, maybe a slightly better passer, but Caleb Wiley was and is the pacier player, better defensively, definitely a lot more feisty, and definitely presses with a lot more intensity. And I think, in open space, he is far more dangerous and clinical than George Bello was in front of goal. And so definitely, I think, you know, those were the differences. But then, yeah, you look at the stats a little bit, and, you know, the stat test shows that, you know, there is this little aspect where, George Bello, I think he would find himself in a lot more scoring positions. But, yeah, he wasn't able to maybe be as clinical and have the final third actions to, get on the stat sheet. But, I think the most interesting bit was that, when their time was on the pitch, that the team success, as according to FBref.com, it said that they had wildly different, maybe not wildly, but like pretty, like it, one's in a positive, essentially, plus plus 0.3 in terms of plus minus 90. And that's a goal scored minus goals allowed by the team while the player was on the pitch per 90 minutes played, while Caleb Wiley is only at 0.04. And then the kind of on-off is wildly different at 0.3 and a negative 1.4. All that kind of like, math mumbo-jumbo is just basically saying that the team was a little bit more successful when George Bello was on the pitch than Caleb Wiley in roughly the same amount of minutes, which is very interesting because the 2021 team is not a really good team, you know? Like, they weren't exactly a picture of success, I would say. And, while 2023, we weren't exactly world beaters, we were definitely a slightly better team, I would say, than the 2021 side. But I think that's what's very interesting is that, our start maybe to the season in 2023 maybe has something to do with this. And, we really only really picked it up after the summer transfer window. You know, that's when we were like way more dangerous because, we had the decent start to the beginning of the season, and then we had that lull where, winning matches was hard to come by. But, so maybe that was the factor. But in terms of, answering his question here, that's Caleb Wiley has a limited ceiling. It's also this, I think, like, Wiley, I think physically, from that standpoint, is a monster at fullback. From the pace, he's continually getting stronger. His power is definitely increasing by the game, I would say. So it's also, 5'11 player versus a 5'7 player. It's I think the ceiling is probably a lot higher. So at least from that physical standpoint. Now, from a playing on the ball standpoint, yes, Caleb Wiley, I think, has some room for growth to get to where Bello, he was consistently beating his man on the dribble. And I would say it's a little bit of a wash at this point because it depends on what team would go in for him and what they value versus, exactly kind of apples to apples here. But they're both fullbacks, but depends on what type of fullback that you want for your team. So, but what were your thoughts on this?
I think they're very similar in terms of when you look at their stats, a lot of, like you said, it becomes a bit of a wash. However, you can see the different kind of personality of player and what the coach is wanting the player to do. you know, we just had very different playing strategies with Bello than we do with Caleb Wiley, at least right now. And we're a high-press team that really values counter-pressing. Right when we lose the ball or the other team is being loose with it in their own half, we attack, we put pressure, we go after them. And Caleb's great at that. You know, his pressure, tackles, interceptions, shots, blocking, you know, all that kind of stuff that happens in the opponent's third is significantly better than Bello's. And that just goes to show his ability to counter press is something that this team has. This is one of their DNA pieces, whereas the other team with George Bello, not as much. So, it, like you said, a team that would value more a traditional left back, that would be George Bello, would be fine at that. And a team that's the way we play right now with a high counter press, Caleb excels at that. And so that's why you see it come out in the stats. In some areas, he's overweighted in that and being very good at that, and then versus not as good as some of the other things that George Bell can do as a more traditional left back. So like you said, it is what you want in a fullback. However, for my money and what I want Atlanta United to do with him, I think we need to say that he is the pick for us if we were going to have to make a decision between these two players and like who would do better on our team right now. I would say Caleb Wiley. It just fits with the way we play better. And I guess in terms of potential, it's still early. It's hard to tell. Bello kind of fizzled out a bit. I am not sure Wiley will do that, but we're not going to be able to tell. Basically, all you can do is look at previous stats and comparable ages from different seasons and see, like, how do they match up? And like we kind of already went over, they're just different style of player. So it really is just what you want in the player. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Well, next question comes from Connor28, Leagues Cup Guru. Asks, more just general question, what team across all of MLS has y'all's most worries so far? For me, I feel the scariest teams are Philly and the Red Bulls since they're so good in transition. Columbus are very scary but are having issues, so I don't know what to think about them. Interesting. What do you think?
I think it's Cincinnati and Red Bull are ones that would give me the most fear right now. Because Cincinnati is just so dang good, still. And New York, we always have problems with them. And just being able to deal with that insane press that they do, it's always given us problems. We've only recently got the monkey off our back with, like, you know, being able to beat them. But I don't think that is something we can consistently count on happening. It's going to be difficult every time we play them because their strategy is the antithesis to what we do. So it attempts to pick us to pieces. We have to be extremely good, extremely perfect to not let Red Bull get away with what they like to do. So that's why it's a little bit nervy going into a game against them. And not on top of that, Red Bull traditionally isn't that good in the standings. Yeah, they're a perennial playoff team, but like they're usually not this high up, at least not now. So that leads me to believe not only are they, you know, using their tactics that give us fits, it seems like they're doing it at an accelerated level this year, which worries me. So yeah, we might, but like this is something that we've kind of harped on earlier in the season when we gave the preview of this year. Atlanta's gotten better. We've markedly gotten better. But so has a lot of teams in the East. And Red Bull seem to be a really good example of that. So that worries me a lot. And Cincinnati is just Cincinnati. I don't know when they're going to stop being good. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it's good points. I think it's also this, though. I think it's both Ohio teams for me. Like, FC Cincy, Columbus. Columbus is going to figure it out. They're just so dangerous. I think Red Bulls, as far as a personal standpoint of, like, against LA United, sure, yeah, like, I'm worried there. But New York Rebels are New York Rebels, I think, to me. They are perennial ballers. They are not a team that ultimately does much in the playoffs. And I don't really feel like this early season surge really has shown too much different than, than a yesteryear. Yeah, I think they have slightly more clinical players. Lewis Morgan is having an incredible start to the season. But I think it's a little bit of the thing where, the Red Bulls, with the style that they play, it requires a lot of energy. And to sustain that through the entire season, I think that's the difficulty. So I just don't think that they, quality on the ball wise, will be able to sustain that through the entire season. So from a worrisome standpoint, I don't really worry about them like that. And then another team that we haven't talked about, obviously, is Inter Miami. And, the top level talent on that team is just outrageous. And, they'll find moments of magic. And I think that's, it shows why they're at the top of the standings right now. They're just still, whether Messi plays or doesn't play, you still have Luis Suarez and, just other top level talent that just puts them over the top. And it's just, I think that's a team that I think in terms of winning the East or not, or, winning the Supporters Shield, I think that's probably the team that I would be worried about the most, because they just find a way. But next question comes from Henry Higuita. He asks, interested to see y'all answer this question. Which player on the team right now would surprise you the most if you suddenly learned they stream Fortnite on Twitch? He also went on to say, my answer is Dax, which is kind of surprising. Yeah, because Dax, being of more of the dad variety, I would say, and on the team, playing Fortnite. It's like Fortnite is probably a little bit more teenager to early 20s probably right now in terms of that type of age bracket. But who would be your surprise player?
It would blow my mind if Brad Guzan played Fortnite. I would absolutely tune in to watch that stream. That would be hilarious.
It would be
if he did that. Yeah, but there's no way in hell. Absolutely no way in hell.
He's got some young kids. I don't know if they're that type of family that would be allowing their kids to play that. So I don't know. But for me, which player on the team? Brad Guzan is probably the best bet here. But I would say, it would be surprising if Brooks Lennon played, because I don't think he's that type of person. Like, I don't think he's playing video games. I think he's like more of like an outdoors person. He's playing golf. He's, doing all these other things. And streaming, I'll just be honest, Brooks Lennon,
if Brooks did play video games, he'd be a Call of Duty guy, 100%.
Probably. But even then, it's like, I don't think he's streaming. You know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't. This is what I'm getting at, is that, Brooks Lennon isn't exactly the hallmark of a big personality, or a person that's, I think hosting something, in which that's what streams are. And so it's like, not sure. Not sure that would be, that would not happen, I feel like. That would be the biggest surprise for me. So, but, And then last question comes from, just lost it on here. Lancillo Green asks, when is it time to lean on the academy? And as far as that goes, I mean, I think we are, to a degree. You have a Johnny Fortune, a homegrown in the squad. Noah Cobb is a homegrown. You have Caleb Wiley, who's a homegrown. You have some other players that are coming in, Ashton Gordon as well, that's may get some looks in the near future, maybe not this year, but Yeah, he definitely is going to be part of the first team next year. Yeah, I mean, up and down the spine, pretty much, you have some players that you know, are kind of looking good for kind of filling out the positions on the team. So, you know, I don't really feel like that's really an issue. But how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an issue either, because, you know, it's MLS is a particular league. You know, we have particular rules and way we have things set up that you have to be very, very careful with who you put where. So knowing that, it's hard for me to say, you know, we need to dip into the academy if it doesn't, you know, like just to do it, right? I don't know if that's a good idea. I mean, it's like it's a good idea in that it's like good advertisement for the academy, because it's like, okay, people are really getting pulled up, and they are, but to get them even more, you know, to do it at a higher clip, it's just for the sake of doing it, I think can put your team perhaps at a disadvantage, considering there's just only so many slots that you can utilize for various kinds like GAMTAM, you know, thank you ma'am type player slots. So yeah, I think we're doing okay job. I mean, my question back would be, you know, compared to what other team, you know, if you're saying like Philadelphia, Dallas, you know, some of the other academies that are notable, like, are they doing way more than we are? And if they are, it's like, okay, interesting. But if they're not, I mean, I would probably suspect that they're not doing a tremendous more than we are.
All right. And I think that's the thing, too. I think you pretty much kind of made the point of that where, yeah, you know, you don't want to be the team that leans too heavily on your academy when you don't really need to. Like, doing it for just the sake of doing it is not really something that I would say yields end results immediately, because you're having to deal with the growing pains of players versus a little bit more of a finished product of players, and maybe ones that maybe have a little bit of room for growth on them. But yeah, I feel like, yeah, that's what we're kind of going more towards now, is the slightly more finished product, in that we're not having to see them kind of fulfill their potential. They're already near their potential and maybe just need a little bit more, you know, game time, you know, that type of thing. And so it's like the Sean da Silvas, the Saba Lapsenitzes, you know, those players probably wanted a little bit more playing time and are getting it. Yorgos Yakumakis as well. You know, definitely a player that was sitting on the bench, but you see how dangerous he is, and, you know, in MLS, a pretty complete player. So, definitely, I think more of those, I think, gets us over the top in this league versus, you know, trying to build, like we were doing, players to be sold to Europe. Just not really something that was very effective for us. So, anyway, that does it for the mailbag and gets us to the match preview. And yeah, 6:30 on Saturday, 4:20. We were playing FC Cincinnati at the Benz. They lost 2-1 against CF Montreal last week. And
Joseph.
So, you know, yes, indeed, indeed. And yeah. In terms of us playing them recently, in October of 2023, we drew them 2-2, and our
that
last
was a hell of a game.
That was a hell of a game. But our last six, we won 2, drew 3, and have lost 1. So, you know, definitely not too bad in terms of our last kind of record against them, but. You know, they still are a dangerous side, and I think that's the thing is, you know, nothing can be taken away from them. They are a tough side. They played us tough at home. They, yeah, they're just, you know, wherever they play, at least recently, they're a force to be reckoned with. They're not the wooden spoon team that they used to be at all. But they have lost a few key pieces, some that have kind of come to rule the roost for them, almost immediately, because Brandon Vasquez moved to Monterrey and he punished them. It was some instant karma there, a little bit, unfortunately for them. But as well, yeah, they lost Junior Moreno, Jefferson Mosquera, Santiago Arias, but they did sign, of course, Miles Robinson, yeah, also Corey Baird, Pablo Bucha, Luca Oriano. And so, yeah, I mean, Miles Robinson, obviously, you know, we know very well. And, yeah, you know, he's has been called to the U.S. men's national team since then, since he's been with FC Cincy. And, yeah, you know, a little partnership with Matt Miazga as well, who was the reigning MLS Defender of the Year. So definitely a very, very stacked roster. And they've also added, of course, DeAndre Yedlin. So, you know, it's going to be a tough side to play against. But, you know,
their back line is like the entire United States men's national team.
Pretty much, you know. And so, you know, it's if they, if and when anything happens for the U.S. men's national team, in terms of goals conceded, we can just blame it on FC Cincy, because
I'm surprised they didn't go and grab Zach Steffen.
Yeah, right. I know, right? Yeah, that and well, you know, obviously they can't really bring in Anthony Robinson, but you know, maybe later on, if he no longer is a Premier League player, well, you know, I'm sure they'll do anything they can to kind of solidify that entire thing. Well, maybe they won't, because that would severely limit them on international breaks. But hey, if you want to do that, by all means. But the predictions from the pundits around the league have them finishing as low as fifth and as high as first, which, yeah, I mean, you know, probably checks out. I mean, they're a very stacked roster, and Pat Noonan has them playing some pretty good ball last week, notwithstanding. But yeah, they are definitely that team that's yeah, pretty complete in a lot of senses, except for the forward line a little bit in terms of kind of finishing some chances at the moment. Yeah, they're just not quite at the levels that they were last year. Obviously, losing Brandon Vasquez will do that to you, but you know, still defensively pretty stout squad. That's, yeah, you know, they can play that little ball. They can play, you know, where they take shots from distance as well. So, you know, but I think we can get at them by being pretty aggressive, playing direct, like we have in some past games, and yeah, really get at them on transition. And kind of test that defense a little bit, you know, in those moments when we're on the counter. But because yeah, we know we have some devastating players that can kind of make that difference. But yeah, what are some things that you'd like to see from us playing against them?
I want to see one thing, one thing, and that one thing is, for the love of God, close down Lucho Acosta. Do not let this guy operate. He will hurt you. He does it every time to us. Just don't let it happen. Don't let it. I'm almost okay with tying or losing. Well, not losing, because that would break our undefeated record at home. But just like, I would be okay with tying if at least we stop that man from doing anything. Like if other people end up scoring, it's like, okay, but at least we did our damn job, and that's to keep that guy silent, because he goes on tears and he opens up so much space. It's hard to pin him down and to stop him from creating. He's a creator in chief for Cincinnati, and that will be target number one for us to stop. And then from there, hopefully, their attack dissolves and we can hurt them. I don't know if we'll play. I mean, it's interesting. Atlanta does this thing where sometimes they'll start playing counterattack focused, and sometimes they'll do their possession focused. I've noticed it's when we have our ideal starting 11 that sometimes they'll revert to their counterattacking ways. And sometimes, like, when we have the more death pieces, we do the possession. I mean, we can do it both with both fields of players. However, it just seems to be more weighted for one than to the other. And I'm not sure what will deploy against Cincinnati or what the players will feel, you know, because they have the ability to adapt on the fly depending on what Cincinnati throws at them. So I'm not sure if they will try and absorb a little pressure and then hurt them, or to build out the back possession based like we are kind of known to do traditionally. So it'll be interesting. Cincinnati's a good team. Playing out the back, that sounds a little nervy to me. So if we maybe try with the counterattacking strategy, at least for some part of the game, to throw them off and to hurt them on a counter or in transition, like, that would be pretty neat to see. A little flexibility from Pineda and the players, that would be nice. I don't know if Cincinnati would be prepared for that. So we'll see. It's interesting. There's a new arrow in the quiver, per se, for Atlanta United on occasion when we have some players in, and it really, I guess, depends on whether or not those players will make an appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's well said. I mean, it's definitely a big thing where we, when we have our top players, we're just kind of letting them have the reins to the attack, and yeah, just, you know, go at goal as quickly as possible, and, you know, score as many goals as you can. And you know, maybe that is the case if we can have more of our attack healthy. And that is the question, because yes, you have you had a number of players out last match, and who likely will still be out. Stian Gregersen, yeah, he's probably got one more week maybe, as far as his minimum meniscus, and yeah, minimum exactly. And Jamal Tiare, probably 2 to 3 more weeks with his hamstring. Williams out probably 1 to 2 more weeks with his calf. Gigi got back into training today. There was apparently a bit of a where it was a break after the past match for most of the players, where yeah, maybe there was a little bit of individual training and recovery, but no actual formal training, at least on Monday. And then of course Sean Da Silva as well. Believe he's day to day, so that is the question. Who's going to be actually starting? Well, let's get into that predicted starting 11. And yeah, easy between the sticks here, Guzan, but yeah, also at fullback, probably pretty easy.
Also, I just want to point this out. Tom Boger apparently hasn't been watching Atlanta United in any of their games on his power rankings video he put out. He called for Guzan being benched because we were, you know, high on, in terms of like shots conceded, but I first of all, I don't really know how that's Brad's fault, and second of all, Brad's doing pretty damn good when it comes to stopping things. So just say you didn't watch the Atlanta United games, Tom. That's all I'm saying. Just be honest.
Yep, exactly right. It's a tired argument at this point. It's kind of lazy punditry, I would say, in that sense. So, but
I mean that is not meant with any animosity. I know as one person, it's impossible to follow all the teams and be completely accurate about everything. So, but just be like, hey, you know what? Didn't catch those last couple games, so I'm not quite sure why. You know, that's the case. So, you know, who knows? Yeah. Start Brad's. Who knows?
Yeah. It's, I mean, I'm not holding it back. I mean, it's just basically, it's, you didn't, if you didn't watch it, then you shouldn't commentate on it. It's just straight up. But, you know, so, Lennon and Wiley at fullbacks, and, you know, I think it's probably, it's going to pick itself at, the center back positions, Cobb, Abram as well, just because, yeah, pretty much both the other two starting center backs are out. Who do you have in midfield? Any surprises?
No.
Yeah. Schlisch, Muyamba. I mean, Schlisch, like, I think I hope he's tied to Acosta in this match.
And, yeah.
Like, tied to his hip. And, I mean, don't get too close, obviously, where, you know, don't don't get two yellow cards or anything like that. But, you know, definitely Muyamba with some of that help marking him as well. Maybe
speaking of Tristan,
hunting in groups.
You know, he was interviewed for before this, and he voiced that the team's pissed that they dropped points against Philadelphia. They're pissed off. So I'm expecting to see Tristan, obviously, to start. And with that, the fire and the revenge in their eyes in this game. That's what I expect to see, and I hope to see them come out guns blazing.
Yeah, take it out on FC Cincy. I would like it. I would like it. Yeah, I think the interesting bit is on the wings here. So, of course, Saba on the right, but who's on the left?
Yeah, I mean, if Zane is available, I would go with him. But, yeah, I guess, I mean, he likes to use Tyler Wolf. I just feel like he hasn't done great so far. But, I mean, your alternative is perhaps Derek, and I just maybe Pineda gives Derek a shot because of Tyler not doing amazing. But I'm curious to see if Pineda thinks, you know, Tyler's doing good enough at that position. I'm not sure. He might.
Yeah. And you also good have enough, Edwin Mosquera as well.
Yeah, there's also possible. You could put Edwin all the way over there. But again, it just seems like he's very committed to the idea that he needs an Edwin Mosquera to come on late in order to dominate and, you know, devastate a tired back line. That seems to be like his kind of like game ending play. Like, okay, we get a goal, we get two, maybe it's tied, maybe we're up by one. Mosquera comes in to put the game away. I think that's his trump card. So I don't know if he wants to get rid of that for this, and so much so that, you know, get rid of your kind of your trump card, and because, you know, in order for Tyler Wolf to not be out there. And then what do you have if you were to put Mosquera out there? Then you have someone like Tyler Wolf to come in later, and is he someone who puts a game away? I'm not so sure. So sometimes he can be, but I think your better bet is Mosquera. So, yeah, I would maybe, if Zonde's available, Zonde. If not, I guess we'll maybe see Tyler again. It would be really weird to see Derek, but I could possibly see it. But, yeah.
Yeah, for me, yeah, I mean, I get your standpoint where, yeah, maybe that player that brings the energy late in the match, but I feel like we might have some other players that can come in, but I feel like it's always this. I mean, yes, FC Cincy, a tough squad. Yeah, you know, you will need the defensive work to really carry you through. But I feel like it might be Mosquera on the right and then Saba on the left here. And they may switch sides and switch wings, but I think it's for this. It's, you know, you want to win it as early as possible and not, you know, try to belabor the point sometimes, especially at home. Now, if we were on the road, okay, yeah, I think it would be more, okay, who's the most defensive while still providing, you know, attack value. And it would be Sean Da Silva if he's obviously healthy. But I don't think he is. And so, you know, I think Mosquera is that that player that would come in on the wings for that. But, yeah, Almada in the middle, of course. And, yeah, the real question is if Gigi is healthy. And
at this point, I don't really mind if Daniel Rios plays for us, because he scored last game and he didn't look half bad. He was a little quiet, but not super involved in build-up play as I would be hoping for. But that's to be expected, his real first start. You know, he's still getting acclimated and everything. Yeah. But yeah, I wouldn't be like, let's bring out the white flag if Daniel Rios comes on. But right. I'm hoping. I mean, they're going to be really cautious with him still. So I would imagine that if he is back this weekend, it'll be limited time and we will see Daniel Rios.
Yeah. It's probably more of a cameo for sure. Yeah. So, Daniel Rios, yeah, I mean, he had a decent match. Yeah, exactly. It was, from a pressing standpoint, didn't really see him maybe,
he's slow, dude. He's slow. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. It's not like, kind of a massive, help from, that standpoint, but you know, I think if we play to his strengths, which is route one, yeah, I think, you know, we might be able to do some of that work here. And I think that plays a part into how we might be able to attack him because, yeah, you know, I don't think he's the player that, you know, is playing on the counter. But it is where, okay, maybe, you know, with Mosquera, we have that out ball. And then on the counter with that pullback, that's where you can, you know, find a player that with a late man run or at the back post with Daniel Rios. I think that's where... we can hurt FC Cincy as long as we can make sure that, yeah, that safety valve in Miles Robinson, you know, we're not playing to him. So maybe it's, you know, we have to switch it. We have to switch it to the other side where, you know, maybe it's Saba playing the ball from the left. Yeah,
that would be wild to see, but yeah, maybe. Yeah,
exactly. So he has a really decent left foot, so, you know, it's not unheard of. But yeah, that gets
it's
us
unheard of from a Pineda standpoint.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, so that gets us to the score prediction. And what do you got?
I'll say 1-1. That's a tricky one.
Yep.
Because I got it very wrong with the Philadelphia game, which is not normal. That was a strange game. That was a very that very much flipped the way I view things. Yeah, it was weird. This game, I feel like Cincinnati is going to offer a heck of a lot more than Philadelphia did. Like, for 75% of the beginning of that game, Philadelphia didn't offer that much. They were, like, a little dangerous here and there. But for the most part, I felt like we handled them. Cincinnati, I think, is going to be a different animal. I think it's going to be more even in terms of possession, more even in terms of attacks, and chances on both sides. So, and they're clinical. You give them chances, they will put them some away. So I think, like, it's probably going to be more than 1-1, but I'm hoping we can hold them to one. And I'm hoping this one might be we claw one back towards the near end.
Yeah, I had exactly the same scoreline. I don't know if I see it going exactly the same way, but I think, yeah, they'll definitely be a lot more defensively stout in that sense. And, yeah, I think they'll have learned a little bit from our last match with some of these players too. So, yeah, you know, like Daniel Rios obviously has played in this kind of division in that sense. So, yeah, they will know him a little bit as well. It won't be maybe as kind of a unknown quantity in some senses. So, yeah, you know, hopefully we can get the winner here, but I'm also seeing 1-1. So, but guys, yeah, that is pretty much the entire episode except for the question of the day. And since we are... officially, anyway, 100 days out from League's Cup and 100 days out from the Paris Olympics. Well, that means Thiago Motta is going to be away for the League's Cup. And I'm asking it now. Do you have high hopes for the League's Cup without Thiago Almada? Let us know in the comments below because, yeah, that month, it's going to be a big month. Out our best player. So, yep. Let us know in the comments below. Looking forward to what you have to say. And that's it for us today. Remember to subscribe to us if you haven't already. Share this episode and leave us a review and rating so we can pop up higher in your rankings. And for Michael, I'm AJ. Thanks so much for listening.